But our next speaker is Carson Siebert. Okay, great. Talking about practical tools for exploratory web graphics.
Okay, well, thank you, Hillary. So a few of you here might be wondering, I get along just fine with static graphics. Why do I need to introduce interactivity into my graphics? And I think this question should really be broken down into two parts. First, you should ask yourself, why should my presentation graphics be interactive? In other words, the graphics that you would maybe show your colleagues or to help get your story across. I think that's really the main point of why a presentation graphic should be interactive, is it should really be used to help get your point across or help your audience actually play with your data. But the interactivity should be opinionated or constrict the audience in some way so that they can't, you know, get off into the deep end and it, you know, generate things that aren't interesting. And then the second part to that is for exploratory graphics, or the graphics that I would generate when I first get a data set and just want a basic understanding of what's in my data, if I haven't seen it before or I'm new to whatever the process is that's generating the data, really I think the main thing that you would want out of an interactive exploratory graphics is to generate your insights faster. And this makes the iteration time, or the time that is required to generate new graphics, very, very important. So what kind of insights do I mean? I have this little table here, which sort of, this is sort of like a taxonomy of different types of interactivity you could have in your graphics, and what types of questions they help you answer. So the first one here I think most people are familiar with. You might, you know, produce a scatter plot and one point looks a little weird. You might want more information about that point. So you might want additional info about that point. So this is something that I would call identification, where you can just hover over that point or mark and get more information about that data point. Another really broad type of interactivity I would categorize as a filter. So that might help you ask the question, how does one group relate to another? And Shiny provides a ton of different ways for doing this, like the select input, where you can filter on a categorical variable, for instance, or a slider input, where you could filter on a continuous variable. And I guess zoom and pan is very similar to this type of interaction, where I would consider zoom and pan sort of like a continuous filter, well, a filter on a continuous variable, where you might click and drag on a plot to zoom in on a particular region to see if there's any interesting on a local level, if sort of the local trend reflects the global trend, sort of a thing. And then this last one is another very broad category that I call linked highlighting. And I guess the most general question this helps us ask is, say you want to compare a marginal or a joint distribution to a conditional distribution that's similar to the marginal or the joint. So a really popular example of this is linked brushing on a scatterplot matrix. But I would consider this just one example in this broader category of linked highlighting. So we've had really great tools for interactive graphics for a long time, even before the web. So why do we want to actually move to the web for interactive graphics? And this is actually a real-life depiction of me trying to install and use these interactive graphics software of the past. I even find now that I would consider myself somewhat of an expert in some of these things, I still, you know, can't install some of these software tools. So by moving to the web, you get a certain amount of portability because web browsers are cross-platform. So these things, you know, again, for them to be practically useful, I shouldn't have to spend an entire week trying to figure out how to just get the software to work. And another big reason, if you are familiar with the history of interactive graphics, like we've had these great tools, but they haven't been actually composable, where you can take advantages of the strengths of multiple different systems. But with web graphics, we can do this. And I want to show you a little. There's a lot going on here, but I have this little example of how we can currently use something like Shiny to take advantage of, you know, multiple different R packages that connect to web-based visualization systems. So this is, there's a lot going on here, but this is, I think there's a few Australians in here which will appreciate this example. But this data comes from the city of Melbourne in Australia. And on the map here, I have a dot for every motion sensor that they have located in the city. And these motion sensors give a count of the number of people that walk by the sensor every hour. So I have these little plots here where every dot on this plot is the number of people who walked by a station hourly. So these are the 24 hours throughout the day, and I have data from multiple years and multiple stations. I can hover over a point to see the actual station and the time of day where this count refers to. And I actually have, this is like millions of records in this data. So in this top plot here, I'm actually showing 1% of the data because we're sort of restricted in how much we can actually push to the browser. But to make sure I'm not missing the overall trend, I'm showing a five-number summary over the hours of the day here on the bottom to give you sort of a summary of what's happening in the entire data set. So everything in this app is interactive, where if I want to look at a particular station, what I can do is I can click. I'll explain this other plot in a second. But you can see I've programmed this, so if I select a point on the map, it highlights all of the points related to that station, and then I can immediately see for this station, there seems to be a lot of peak in activity around the eighth hour in the day, the start of the workday, and at 17 hours, which is 5 p.m. for us Americans, there's peaks sort of at the start and the end of the workday. And so what this plot is here is you can think of this also as sort of summary statistics on each time series for each station. And these are actually different time series cognostics. So the one this is sort of, I already know what's sort of interesting in this data, but this, so this is a parallel coordinates plot where this axis right here corresponds to the entropy of the time series. So if a line appears low on this axis, that means it has a low entropy. So what I can do is I can click and drag to select stations that have a low entropy. And then I can see immediately graphically where those stations appear. And I can also see, you know, a summary of how the activity is for those stations. And then you can also provide some controls for, you know, if you want to compare one group of stations to another, if I want to compare low entropy to high entropy, I can color those at different points. And then you can sort of compare the summaries between those two groups. So I guess this is an example of this more general idea of comparing marginal or joint distributions to a conditional distribution. So the black would be the joint or the marginal, and then these the stuff that I'm overlaying would be conditionals. So that's great. And we can do this with tools like Shiny. But notice when I do some of these selections, I have to do like a full redraw of these graphics. And this is sort of getting into problems that Joe talked about if you attended Joe's talk yesterday on crosstalk. I think crosstalk is a great step forward for making some of this stuff a little bit easier and moving some of that interaction to the client so that instead of having to refresh and do a full redraw of this plot, what you would really want is just to alter the color of the things that you've selected. So there's a lot more efficient ways we can do this and not require such heavy infrastructure, which I'm really looking forward to. Maybe next year we'll have some really nice examples. So I want to get back to this idea of, you know, web graphics are really great for presentation, but we have a long ways to go in terms of providing nice tools for actually exploring data where you don't actually know ahead of time what visualization is appropriate for your data, and you might be throwing away a lot of the graphics that you're producing, but you still want some interaction in those exploratory graphics in some cases to, you know, produce insights faster. So this is why I really believe in what we're doing with Plotly, where, you know, when we first started Plotly, the basic idea was we'll just convert ggplot2 graphics to an interactive web-based version. So this is great that I can just write ggplot2 code, and it's one simple function, ggplotly, to convert that to, by default, it uses SVG graphics to render the graphic. But now with a newer version, it'll be a lot easier to actually use stuff like WebGL, where I can render a whole lot more points. And this is actually plotting the entire Diamonds data set, which is over 50,000 records. And, you know, produces it almost instantaneously using WebGL, where SVG would just sort of choke on that many points. So I can still do things like hover over points to identify what is this point. And I can also click and drag to zoom in on specific regions. And I suddenly see, oh, there's actually a gap in this data. There's no points between a price of $14.50 and $15.50. And this is something, you know, I wouldn't be able to see with just the entire data displayed in one view. And then you can also do things like click on the legend entries to filter based on, you know, a variable that you've mapped to color or something like that. So you're basically getting a lot of interaction basically for free if you already know ggplot2. So some more advanced sort of extensions of what we can do with ggplotly. Probably my favorite example comes from James Curley tweeted out this graphic of English Premier League teams. And he has this plot where he basically highlighted the most recent season for each team. And then in gray, he has all the prior seasons. So you can sort of see how each team did in this most recent year. And I looked at it and I thought, well, you know, that'd be great if I could easily, you know, change the selected year to, you know, prior years. So what I did is I used ggplotly to convert this graphic, and then I mapped color to the season year. So the lines that are a little lighter in color are more recent. So if you just take Arsenal, for example, you can see that the darker lines are lower and then the lighter lines are higher, meaning that they accumulated points faster, meaning they had a better season in more recent years. So they've been sort of getting better throughout the years. Same with Liverpool. You can see Sunderland's kind of been going downhill here at the bottom. But then what I can also do is I can hover over any one of these lines to essentially select a year where I sort of gray out the non-selected years, and then you can see, oh, in 2005, Sunderland had a terrible season, but then I can also see how the other teams did and whether teams were actually playing in that year. I could do the same thing for Arsenal. You could see their really terrible year was in 1912, probably when they first started. I could be horribly wrong about that. But. So this is great, but ggplot2, the interface wasn't designed for interactive graphics. We're adding more on where you can, you know, first convert your ggplot2 graphic and then do some more advanced interaction stuff on top of that. But you would really want the interface from the beginning to be designed for interactive graphics. And one of the, like, ggplot2 is very opinionated about how you do data visualization, and it requires data frames. And this leads to some really elegant concepts and some really nice abstractions. But if you have a specialized visualization type, data frame isn't always the most efficient way to store the data for your graphic. So that's sort of motivated this other interface, which is non-ggplot2, called plot underscore Lee. And it's a sort of a started out as a low-level R interface to Plotly.js. And over the last month, I've been adding a lot to it. And there's going to be some breaking changes, but a lot of good things are going to come out of this, where there's going to be smarter defaults, informative errors, and higher level functionality. So I'll give you a small taste of this. If you, say, have a numeric matrix, Plotly.js has several different visualizations that are nice for a numeric matrix. And if I just take my numeric matrix and map it to Z, then Plotly is going to say, well, I don't really have enough information to know what type of visualization you want here, but I'm going to provide a nice default and say, I'm going to apply a heat map for you. So all I told Plotly was I want a numeric matrix as Z, and it'll give me a heat map. It'll also do things like, you know, if you do something crazy, like try to assign 100 random points to an attribute called puppies, it's going to say, come on, that's great, you love puppies, but you got to supply at least an X or a Y if you want to make a box plot. So for a long time, if you misspelt the naming of an attribute or something like that, Plotly would not tell you about this. But now it will. And the redesign is meant so that you can sort of intermingle dplyr verbs, and it'll sort of recognize dplyr stuff. So you can start with a data set, say I want to group by this grouping variable, and then make a plot, and this would be a way of creating a time series where the grouping is by city. And this is sort of false advertisement. I'm doing some stuff that I'm not showing you to make it so that if I hover over a line, I can select that line and gray everything else out. So this is a nice way of, you know, seeing interesting stuff like, oh, what happened in this city around that time? And then it's a little bit more like the layered grammar of graphics, where, you know, I could add a line for every city, and then you can actually use dplyr verbs like filter to then filter the data that's behind that visualization, and then add a line for just that city. And with stuff like Broom, we can actually intermingle modeling and data manipulation. But this, another nice function that was recently very much improved is this function called subplot, where you can give it a list of plotlies, and it'll actually arrange everything in a subplot view for you. And then you can also say things like whether you want to share the x-axis or the y-axis. so that so that zooming and panning events are actually shared throughout the plots. So I think that's all the time I have, so thank you.
Great. Okay, I'm sure you can talk to Carson afterwards if we have any questions, but we need to move on to our next speakers.